Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning into another episode of Safe Space, the ABA podcast. My name is Michelle Zeman. I am your host. Please be sure to listen for the two code words so that way you can receive your free continuing education units. And for those of you who are accruing hours, you can, in fact, count listening to this episode and all of our other episodes as unrestricted time. So just a fun fact there in case you are accruing hours to become a BCBA or a BCABA. So on that note, too, I want to introduce you to my guest tonight. She is a student analyst over at To the Moon ABA. We're going to be talking a little bit about her fieldwork experience thus far. So that being said, I am super excited and super pleased to welcome Abby Shire, student analyst at To the Moon ABA. Abby, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course, of course. I'm super excited to get to talk to you a little bit about your fieldwork experience. And, you know, I'm super excited for you to kind of just give us your insight so far. So that being said, let's dive right in. Let's start by sharing a little bit about your journey to the field and what led you to work with To the Moon.
Yeah, so I've been doing this since 2020. I was able to get my first RBT job when COVID was in its height. And I was actually doing an internship in Baltimore. So it was kind of coming to an end and I needed to find an actual job. So I looked around on Indeed and I found a clinic and they were willing to kind of wait for me to come back from Baltimore. So I joined them, was with them for a couple of years and then transitioned into the school system. I always wanted to be in the school system. Working in like special ed. So I was like, okay, this is really cool. I have a couple of years working with some kiddos under my belt. This can be great. And then I realized the school setting wasn't quite for me. So I was able to kind of make it through the year. And then I went back into just the traditional ABA clinic role as a team lead. And I did that for a while and I really loved it. It took me away from the one-on-one session. So I was kind of doing more admin and training and training work with new hires. So it was a little bit different, but it was a really cool experience to kind of get that side of ABA. And then I left and I joined To the Moon. And I finally decided, I think it's time to go back to school and get my degree for ABA to become a BCBA. And here I am. So I'm freshly like in the program, you know, doing the thing. And it's been great. It's been a lot, but I've been really enjoying it.
That's awesome. I know that going back to school can definitely be a lot, especially, you know, after working for a little bit of time and, you know, having to kind of navigate like, you know, being an RBT during the COVID era. And then also you're transitioning between multiple different companies, but then also multiple settings as well. So that has to be a lot. What has that been like for you so far?
It can be overwhelming. Like when I kind of sit down and think about all the experience that I've had, but I'm also really grateful that I got my start when I did. I love that because I had no idea the field of ABA. I just saw the job and it sounded really interesting and kind of what I wanted to do. I was like, I have no idea what this is, but I'm willing to learn it. And I was a natural. I really loved being with the kids and learning all the terminology and all the techniques and the procedures and interventions. And I was like, this is something I can really see myself doing. And I think early on, I was trying to figure out kind of where in this world I wanted to kind of fit in. Did I want to stay as like an RBT, transition to a BCBA? Did I want to kind of go more into like the special ed setting? So I'm glad that I did have that experience in school setting, realizing it's not quite for me, and jumping back into this field and then finally thinking, okay, I think I'm ready to kind of go for it. So having all the different experiences at different companies in the school system, it really helped me kind of solidify and figure out where I wanted to be. And I'm super grateful because it's been a great experience all around with like learning, you know, different ways of doing things, because each clinic is quite similar in a lot of ways, but also very different. So it was really cool to kind of see, you know, where I kind of fall and what my style is.
That's really awesome. And yeah. I love that you talked about like you had multiple experiences, but then you realize this is what you wanted to do. You know, some of us kind of like go into ABA and are like, okay, I want to be at the clinic full time. But then you realize when it comes to ABA, there's so much more that's out there than just being in the clinic. So it was really cool to kind of hear like that you had multiple experiences, but then realize, oh, hey, this is really where I want to be.
Yeah, and you know, I've done school, daycare, home, clinic. So I've done the whole kind of settings. And it's really cool. I do really enjoy the clinic setting. I like being around others and like doing things with like the kids in groups. But then having the home sessions is really cool too, because then you get to do a lot with the family. So there's benefits to both. I know some people can be a little like intimidated by the home setting, but I love like having the siblings and the family collaborate with me and like doing like teamwork together and you know goals and everything. So it's really cool. So you do a lot of different things in the different settings, and you maximize everything you have.
Absolutely, absolutely. I love a multi-setting type of scenario, for lack of a better term, right now. Just because when you get to kind of see things in multiple settings, you know, in a clinic setting, you get to see it more like in an isolated setting where you can work on things in a more like focused area. In a school setting, you have a lot more naturalistic opportunities across teachers and peers and, you know, just other adults in general. And in the home setting, you get to take the skills, do it naturally across different family members. In the community, you know, that's really where like a lot more of the naturalistic teaching comes in. So, you know, every single setting has a lot of different opportunities for you to kind of explore a little bit more. So it's really cool to see that. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about how far you are in school. So when we originally met, I remember you telling me you had taken a couple of classes so far. So tell us a little bit about where you are in the experience and also how it's been so far just with schooling.
Yeah, so I've taken a philosophy course and my ethics course. So I'm still with those two, and I have a few more to go. I'm doing the certificate program since I already hold a master's degree. So it's really cool. I just finished up those, and I'm gonna restart my classes soon. So I've had those. I have a few more, so it's not gonna take me too long to do them, because I like to do two classes per semester, which I was kind of nervous to do, just because it could be a lot and then working full time. But so far, the classes, I've really, really enjoyed my journey with them. I've had excellent professors, and I was kind of nervous about the ethics, because that can be a very daunting topic. But I honestly really enjoyed that. Became actually my favorite class. I really enjoyed it, and I was super nervous, because it can be kind of tricky, because what you think is right may not be the correct answer they were looking for. So it's kind of like those gray areas. And it was really cool to like get such a more detailed account and, you know, understanding of the code of ethics that we have, and, you know, why it's so important. Because I feel like when you start out as an RBT, they go over it, but like this class really went into detail, like chunk by chunk. And it was a really, really awesome course. And the philosophy one was amazing as well, because it was kind of like more of like learning about the theorists and the interventions and different strategies and like terminology, which I do really well in. And I enjoyed that as well. And my professors gave real life application, which is really cool. So they got to tell us like, you know, their life story and then how, you know, it worked out for them. So it was really cool to like get those real life stories and hands-on training to kind of apply to like my job. And because I was so like hyper focused on my classes, I took it all like into the office and was like trying to apply everything I learned and like remember all the terminology and all the different things and theories. And it was really cool. And even doing my field work, I tried to kind of go back to, okay, this is what I'm working on. How does this relate to class, to kind of like put it all together? Because that's kind of how I think really well. It was really, really cool. I've been enjoying school and tackling work. It's very stressful, don't get me wrong, but it's definitely worth it at the end.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I know a few people that are currently enrolled in ethics right now, and a lot of them have reported like it's very overwhelming, but also it's overwhelming, but there's a reason why we have to have it. Like we need to be able to know our code front and back. And also too, you made an excellent point earlier. You said, you know, what we may feel is right is not necessarily what the board is going to look for. And it's true. So I might sit here and I might say, hey, this is what I think this is interpreted to be. But then when you bring it and put it up against the code of ethics, you might have two completely different scenarios here. Not that you're wrong, but there's a different answer that the board is going to provide to you, you know?
Yeah, that was definitely the big one, because a lot of it they do like media work where we have to go through like different scenarios. And it can be really, really tricky because the answers are like the choices they give you. They all sound like choices that you would do, but there's only one. And I was like, man, this is what I think the answer is, but this is the actual answer. And I was like, okay. So it was really kind of cool to like challenge myself on that and to think outside of just my own perspective. I think that was like the most important part, was that different perspective and what's best for everybody, not just what you think.
For sure, especially when you're looking at questions and when you start like taking exams and stuff, you know, the exams that you're going to be given, there's going to be the best answer. There's going to be a really good answer that you might think might actually be the best answer,
yeah.
But it's not the best answer. There's one that's like, okay, you know, I could see it, but it's not the answer. There might be one that's like completely outside of the answer itself, but you know, you might find that, hey, maybe that one is actually a pretty decent answer, you know? So one of the things that I've told some of my students is really be careful with when you're reading the questions, really take apart the keywords, because when it comes to those questions, you might have a 5-sentence long question where you have to look for like 2 to 3 words in order to get your actual answer. And as someone who took the test multiple times, it was frustrating, but it's a solid piece of advice, you know?
That's definitely me. I feel like when I was reading the question, I wasn't fully reading it. I read through it, but then I had to read through it a few more times. And I was like, wow, I missed so many things because I wasn't breaking it down into chunks like you were saying. And then I realized I really need to keep rereading. And then, of course, I would, you know, double think and, you know, be like, oh, I don't know. And like, keep switching my answers. Because again, like some of them sound like really good answers, but that wasn't the one. And then when you find out the real answer, you're like, oh, wow, I can't believe I didn't think of that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yep.
You'd be surprised.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So when you first started accruing hours, you know, so because I know every BCBA candidate, every BCABA candidate has to accrue hours to become a BCBA or BCABA. You have to have unrestricted hours and you have to have restricted hours. What was your understanding when you first started and between the two?
I had a very limited understanding. I did have friends, they work for like different companies and they started their journey. So like, yeah, like, you know, I'm starting my classes and now I have to get all my hours, you know, and I remember them saying like restricted, unrestricted. I was like, what does this mean? So I had no idea what the difference was. I was like, but I kept hearing it all the time. And so finally, when I started, the first thing I said was, what is restricted and unrestricted so that I know what I'm doing? And when it was explained to me, I was like, okay, that makes complete sense. The one-on-one sessions versus, you know, like all the other things that you get to do, like listening to your podcast or doing material prep and, you know, assisting the BCBAs with different assessments, things like that. And it was really, really cool too, because even in my classes, they talked about different ways to get your unrestricted hours. And then, you know, working with my two BCBAs right now, it's been really interesting because they give me really, really relevant, helpful tasks. It's not, you know, kind of like meaningless, you know, just busy work. Like everything that they've given me has really, really helped. And it hasn't been overwhelming because they're always asking, like, are you getting enough? Are you getting too much? You know, like, let us know what is something that you really want to work on or need help with. And they've been really great at, you know, even getting meetings set up to go over all the different things with me, because I'm a bit of a perfectionist and I always take on a little bit more than I can chew sometimes. So it's been really awesome to have the help that I've had and, you know, seeing like all the different things I can do for the hours. So I've been kind of able to do different types of things, like listening to the podcast, writing reviews for it. I've been able to make goals, help with, you know, updating treatment stuff and, you know, reviewing the BIPs and like adding to it, reaching out to other stakeholders that work with my kiddos and, you know, getting consent and, you know, starting to kind of collaborate and see how we can work together to help our kids. So it's been really, really cool, all the different things that I've been doing to get my hours. But I think my favorite is material prep. I love making visuals and I love cutting things out and laminating. So that's always something I love to do, and making and writing goals with, like, you know, how to do it, you know, the reinforcement schedules, everything like that. It's been really, really awesome.
Yeah, you know, and I know too, like, the material prep can definitely be fun. One of the things that I often will tell my, like, candidates, if I need, like, a material, you need to also put a program associated with it, or do something associated with it, because, you know, doing the prep alone, like, if you're just spending time cutting out materials, anybody can do that. But if it's like you're cutting out a material and you're doing something in relation to that particular material, that's where the unrestricted hours come in, you know? So, and one of the things that I often will say is, like, your restricted hours, you're doing your session. You're just being an RBT right now. Your unrestricted is like your BCBA work, you know? So, so doing something like program prep and, you know, reaching out to stakeholders, shadowing parent trainings, running, even I even will incorporate unrestricted opportunities within sessions if I need a BCBA candidate to run something for me. Like, for example, we just recently got a brand new tracing book, because we found out that one of my clients actually struggles with handwriting. And so what I want that particular person to do is come into the next session and say, okay, I want you to probe this, and I want you to tell me where his resiliency is with his writing. Does he get tired after writing a word, like his mom is saying, or does he actually have more resiliency and is willing to write more? You know, so that's where it's, that's where, like, we look at, like, how can we be a BCBA without the title, but then also how can we be creative within our sessions and provide opportunities to our learners? You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I love, you know, when I notice something that they're not quite able to do yet, and I kind of say something to my BCBA, like, hey, I noticed this in session. Could we kind of do some probing and see what's up? See if it's, you know, something that we could work on. And then along with that would come, like, the material prep for that. But I've become really, really good with both of my cases of, because I'm constantly analyzing everything that they do. I'm very hands-on. So, you know, I start to notice a lot of stuff, and I'm like, I wonder if that's something we should be working on. And I always bring it up to my BCBs, and they're like, yeah, let's, like, check it out. Like, let's, you know, collaborate, you know, you probe, write down everything, send it over to me. So I've become really, really good with that. And a lot of the, you know, current goals for some of my kids are things that I've come up with. So it's really cool to kind of, like, see, like, my contribution because of things that I notice that maybe no one else has, because they've been working so long with that kid that maybe they just got used to it. And then I come in with a fresh pair of eyes. And then even sometimes with just visuals, I'm like, I think they would really benefit from, you know, a visual relating to, you know, turn taking or flexibility, you know, creating something to help them if they're more of a visual learner. So I really, really love, you know, that whole collaboration process and contributing in that way with my kids.
I think that's so huge. I love that you have BCBAs that do that, because that's what we need, right? Because the thing is, and I say this probably at least once a week, RBTs are the ones that are out there doing the direct work. You guys are the frontline workers, and we're in the back. Like, we are there between 10 and 20% of hours per week. You know, so if you're seeing a client for 15 hours a week, chances are I'm seeing you guys like 1.5, maybe 3 hours a week.
Oh, yeah.
It depends on, you know, their level of need. It depends on what they, it also just depends on, it depends on, like, what they're approved for as well. So for me, like, hearing that collaboration piece is so crucial. And I love that you have that. How would you say too, you know, or from your experience, why do you think that kind of collaboration matters during field work and during the time that you have with your BCBAs?
I think collaboration is so important because it's really good to get other perspectives on something, and even collaborating with, like, other BCBAs, to have them come and, like, also look, and, like, even, like, other RBTs, like, cause we're all, like, there together. I think collaboration is what really benefits the child in the long run, because you have an entire team that's saying, I think that this is something that we should be working on because it's really going to be relevant for them. You know, especially when the clinic opened and like a lot of kids started to go to the clinic, you know, a lot of things were changing and how they were there was not the same as maybe their home. And so it kind of opened up all these new things that we could be working on. But it's really, I think, important that the BCBA and RBT, when they're working with a kid, they're on the same page and that, you know, everybody feels comfortable to be like, you know, I want to voice a concern or, you know, an opinion, you know, please feel free to like observe us as we go through this. And I want your feedback on it if it's something big or if it's not, you know, relevant. But collaborating with a kiddo, you know, you get the full spectrum of everything. You know, you get someone who's like really, really qualified and they're up there and then they're training you to become that person. So, you know, it encourages the student analysts and like even new RBTs to get comfortable and to start thinking more outside the box and not being afraid to say, hey, I noticed something and I think it's really important that we focus on it. So, you know, collaborating within the team just helps keep building everyone's morale. It helps, you know, the teamwork. And makes everyone more comfortable in that open communication. Because I feel like if you're kind of shut down every time you voice an opinion and the collaboration is just one-sided, it kind of diminishes, you know, how you work together. So I think, you know, having that relationship between the BCBAs and RBTs is so important because it makes everyone feel seen and heard. And it's also really good teaching moments too, because then the BCBAs are like, you did something that was awesome. Like you saw something that needed to be worked on. You gave me like, okay, here's like a target, a goal, you know, here's some objectives. You wrote out, you know, the error corrections, you know, you did all of this. Like, this is something that's really awesome that you can take with you. And I know for me, like when I get that positive feedback or like when my BCBAs are like, you did a really good job. Like, I'm really proud that you noticed this and you wrote out, you know, the whole teaching procedure, you know, it makes me like, it encourages me to want to do more and be more proactive. And
oh,
I think
absolutely.
That's so important.
Absolutely. That has to be so reinforcing, you know, and I would say like, you are very lucky in that sense. You know, I remember when I was going through my, my like schooling and my unrestricted hours. Well, back then we called them indirect. I'm a dinosaur BCBA. I've been a BCBA for almost 10 years now. It'll be 10 years in 2026. Yeah. But anyways, besides the point, I just remember having ideas, but then I also would get shut down for my ideas. And then I also remember personally, like when I had mentorship with my mentor, that ended up being very one-sided in the sense of, you know, like I wasn't learning anymore. It was just more like,
right.
Why are you doing this? And why are you doing that? And it just was, it was a really rough, you know, situation. And so for me, like as a BCBA and as somebody who does mentor a variety of candidates now, you know, I try to take what that person couldn't do for me. And I think that collaboration piece is so huge. I think, you know, the fact that you have been able to experience that is just so important. It just goes to show too that things have definitely changed over the past decade too.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. I was just about to say, like, over the past decade, you know, as someone who's like taken the two classes now, they really went into the history of ABA. And it's crazy how much it really has changed. And, you know, like you said, like even over the past decade, I feel like BCBAs and RBTs do collaborate a lot more. From, you know, my experience since 2020, I really have noticed more of an open door kind of policy and communication. Of course, I've also worked with some people who've come from different companies that had the same experience you had, where it was very kind of one-sided. So it was also interesting to hear from that and kind of helping them unlearn those things and say, like, this is actually how the field should be. You know, it should be teamwork and collaboration.
Could not agree more.
Yes.
If you tried. Could not agree more. And one of the things you mentioned was how much like your confidence has built, you know, from being able to identify these things and discover these things. What's one project or experience that you've been really proud to be a part of during your time accruing hours?
Oh, man. I think Coming up with goals for my one kiddo has been really awesome because he's been doing really, really well. But then I've noticed there's been a lot of other things that he's needed. So I kind of was tasked with coming up with very specific goals that were more social in nature and more kind of school readiness in nature. And I was able to, create the goals, come up with all the objectives and the targets. And it was really cool to write it all out and then kind of implement this. Even like safety goals for being out in the community. I had a parent tell me, hey, these are my concerns. And so I was like, okay, how are ways that we can work on this in session to kind of help him generalize it to the real world? So coming up with things like that, because, social, communicative, safety skills are really important to me. So being the one to write it all out and then have it for review, because I always like to make sure with my BCBA it looks perfect before we start implementing it. So that's kind of where that communication and collaboration comes in. Like I'll do all of it and like, okay, I have it. But I really want you to look over it just to make sure it's like perfect. I'm a bit of a perfectionist, so I want to make sure. And it's been really awesome to work on those skills with my client and see how much he's thriving and doing so well with it. I was like, and when I have other people like say, I'm like, I came up with this. I'm really proud of myself. Like I thought of it, came up with it, and it was, my BCBA loved it. And, working on it every day with my kid, it's been awesome to see it. And then even having the parents say, like, they've noticed a difference.
Isn't that like probably the most rewarding part about doing what we do is, when somebody says, I noticed that this happened, I think just even as being a BCBA, one of the best things that a family can ever say is, I've noticed so much more improvement, or I've even noticing a little bit of improvement is still so much improvement in our eyes because even if it's a little bit is better than zero.
Oh yeah. And I feel like, BCBAs and RBTs definitely get lost in the job sometimes where we get so hyper focused that we kind of forget to take a step back and see like, wow, they're really improving on X, Y, and Z. And so when you do get that feedback from others, like the family or, whoever else is involved, it's really like, wow, like I am doing a really good job. Because I feel like we take to heart so much and we only focus sometimes on the negative and we get so stressed out that it's sometimes important, like, no, you are doing really well because the family is like, it's a totally different kid, So I think that everybody should really kind of take a step back and be like, look at where we started and look at where we are, and knowing that it's not an overnight change. Like it does take time. And then seeing it like, wow, okay, we're doing it.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that too because I know so one thing that I do at my job every week is I to the best of my ability, I try to host treatment team meetings where basically like and they're supposed to be on a weekly basis, sometimes bi-weekly basis. It really just depends on the client, it depends on like the team itself. So there's a few things that go into it. And one of the things that I like to do is I like to share graphs. And I like
Oh,
to
yeah.
say like, "Hey, I noticed that it's not just like, okay, what is happening with why this graph is so variable and how come we're not getting an update?" No, I don't like to just look at it like that. I like to look at it and say, "Oh my gosh, this kid has mastered out of a couple more targets." And
yeah.
I told them like a week ago, like what? I love being able to do that. And I think that is something that like we as BCBAs, definitely could really do better with. It's just, disseminating the progress that our clients have made and be able to say like, you contributed to that. You did an excellent job with that. I was just kind of here for like the ride and, the support and everything, but you were the one who helped our client get there. That was all you. And of course, that was also them too, but still, that's besides the point,
I think I've always also been the type of person that can't take compliments sometimes. If I am, it's crazy. I'm getting so much better at it, but I'm always so hard on myself because I feel like I can do so much better. And so when people do compliment me and they're like, Abby, you did this, like he's, mastering out all of this because of you. I'm like, well, it's like a group effort. And they're like, no, Abby, you did this. And I was like, okay, I did this. So like I learning to take those compliments, like you were saying, I've definitely gotten better over time because I've always been like, oh, it's a group effort. And they're like, no, Abby, just take the compliments. So I'm like, you know what? I'm doing it. And
Yes.
I tell my kiddos, I'm like, you're doing it too. You're the one who's putting in this work and you are being amazing. So I love doing different affirmations with my kids every day. Even if they don't respond, I just want it to like throw it out into like the world for them to hear like how well they're doing. So I think it's also important to like remind them like you're the one who's working really hard, and like show, boosting their confidence, and I think that's really good too.
That is so crucial. That helps not
Yes.
just grow their skills, but it grows their confidence. Just
Oh
as
yeah.
we're growing our own confidence, we should be
Yeah.
contributing that for our kids too, especially when you're looking at a child that, maybe like a year ago, they couldn't say more than a few words, and now they're saying, words in sentences. It's like that is something to be incredibly proud of. And I could go on about, the compliments thing. I deal with imposter syndrome often. And so,
Yeah.
for me, it's like I definitely relate there. And I think it's that much more vital to recognize the work that RBTs do because you guys are out on the front lines. Yes, I'm writing you some goals and I'm writing you some things to target and I'm training you on those things, but you're putting in the hard work for our clients to be able to succeed.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. I love it. I love it. Well, I'm going to go ahead and drop our first code word. Our first code word is progress. Something we've been discussing is progress. So that is spelled PROGRESS. That is the word progress. So one of the things that we talked a little bit about in our debrief was the importance of not overstepping your boundaries, but while still taking initiative as a BCBA candidate. So how have you personally navigated that balance?
Yeah, I think it's kind of an everyday learning experience. I'm doing much better, especially I have to say, I keep going back to the ethics class, but the ethics class has really also helped me understand like where everyone's job and like, your level of competency and like this is what the RBTs can do, this is what the BCBs can do. So understanding, where the line is drawn. So I've definitely with that class, has really helped me understand, like, okay, I know my area of competency and where it ends. And that's when I start asking questions to better myself, for my, BCBAs and for my kids, as a whole. So I'm like, okay, this is what I know I can do. And this is something where I want to ask for clarification. So I'm always asking for clarification. I'm asking for help. I'm asking for advice. And then that's kind of where they tell me, okay, I'll do this, or you can still do this, but let's, work on this first. Like even collaborating with other stakeholders, working with kiddos, I said, is this something only you can do, or is this something I can help with? So I'm always asking, can I help with this? And kind of learning that way. And I found that that just helps me and like works for me instead of just jumping into things. So I'm always very hesitant, which is a good thing, I think, in this field because, I still want to respect the BCBAs are the ones in charge. And even though like they really want my input and collaboration with everything, I always say you're the one in charge, so let me know as well. Like I want to run things by you, but you have the final say because this is your case and I want to respect that. So I think it's a level of respect and just asking those questions and letting them know and tell, letting them or let, them telling you, where you can and can't kind of go. And so far, it's been really awesome that way for me. I know it might be different for other people, but for me, that's been really helpful.
Absolutely. And also, I just want to say, I love that the can is this something I can help with? I think that is a question that is not asked enough. It's nothing personal. It's not because of anybody doing anything wrong. It's just something that just doesn't come up because we as BCBAs, a lot of us are control freaks and a lot of us just want to make sure that it's done a specific way. And it's like, as much as we want that, we also need to understand there is help out there and we can delegate certain things. For instance, if we need help with some data analysis, that's something that a BCBA candidate is more than welcome to do please take some, you know, data analysis off of my plate and give me some ideas, you know, give me some ideas of how we can do better in these certain goals. Or, you know, another instance that I can think of is with like the reassessment, you know, if there are certain areas of a reassessment that I need assistance with that, you know, if they're able to help out with that, that's something that, again, like, absolutely, you know. So I think a lot of us as BCBAs also kind of get caught up in this, like, this cycle of, oh my gosh, I just want to make sure that it's done right and it has to be done on time.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the time constraints have everything to do with insurance. And that's where it's like, that's where it gets a little headachey there, you know?
Oh yeah, no, totally.
Oh my goodness.
I hear them talk about the time all the time. And I understand. I get it. Yeah, insurance is no joke.
It's no joke. Also, this is coming from someone who just got done with 9 reauthorization reports in a month and a half. Oh, so man. I completely understand that.
Oh,
and
the wow.
Thing, the thing is, like, you know, there's help that I was delegating out, but something that I still need to learn as a BCBA is that it's okay to let go and let some people help and take that extra hand, you know? Yeah. So it's definitely something that we as BCBAs honestly could do better about too, but also identifying that early on, you know, if I would have identified that I had 9 reports due within a month and a half time, if I would have identified that maybe a few months prior, then I could have easily done a little bit more training with my BCBA candidates and told them, like, okay, this is what I need from you. These are the deadlines that I need these done by. And what I want you to do is, and I will sit down and train you. So that's something now that I'm out of report, I call it report writing mountain. It's literally just like a giant mountain. Imagine Mount Everest, except it's with 60 plus page reports.
Oh gosh. It's like the best visual. I'm like picturing you just like slowly climbing up this mountain.
Yes. Yes. Thankfully no avalanches yet, but you know, it's one of those things. It's one of those things where it's like, you're climbing up that mountain and it's like, okay, we're finally getting to the peak. But that being said, you know, that's something that I as a BCBA definitely can do better about, is making sure that I'm not only delegating that, but I'm also making sure that they feel prepared for that. So that's definitely like a big thing that I've taken away is, you know, with the, can I help you do this? Or how can I help you do this? You know, that's really something that as BCBAs, because we are so control freakish about it, we can definitely learn to let go and be a little bit more flexible with that.
Oh yeah, for sure. Cause I know like how hard all of you guys work. And so the part of me is like, I really want to help them, but I also am like, there's certain things that I know that only they are allowed to do and that I can't. So I'm like, that's why I'm always like, can I help with something, you know, and then letting them be like, yes or no, you know? And of course they're always like, of course you can help. You can do, you know, X, Y, and Z, but I have to do this part. It's like, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, there's definitely still some parts that we have to go back in and do, but you know, if we can get any help in any way, we will. I know personally, I definitely need to do better about asking for that help too. So, oh my goodness. What are some ways you've learned to advocate for your learning while respecting your current role and relationships with your supervisors?
Oh, wow. I've learned to kind of say no whenever I feel like I'm getting too stressed about something, because I've always been a kind of a yes girl, saying yes to everything. So, you know, with my school, you know, I've been trying to prioritize that and get that. And then with work as well, like learning what is kind of like too much for me. So, you know, just like sitting down saying, I need to really focus on X, Y, and Z before I can focus on, you know, these other tasks. So really just learning to kind of know what my boundaries are and what's too much for me, so I don't get stressed and burnt out. And, you know, I've always been really ashamed to say no, or saying like, I'm struggling or I need to step back from something. But then I also realize, looking back, it has really helped. And it's made me a stronger person to kind of know my boundaries.
You know something, and I really want to like commend you for saying that. You know, when Even, and I'll take away from like my own experience, but a lot of us do not know how to say no. That is, and that leads to burnout. That leads to things like us leaving the field because we are so overwhelmed. We feel so obligated to do all of these things, and we don't know where the limitations end. As someone who's definitely struggled with that, I remember in my very first supervisory job, I had over 20 kids on my caseload, which,
Oh my
by the
God.
way, is completely unethical.
Yes, I was just about to say.
Yeah, the ethics of that was absolutely awful, and I couldn't get out of it. I ended up leaving the job, But
Oh no.
that being said, staying up until 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, dealing with report writing, contacting insurance, even. Yes, some insurance people do stay up late to address any questions. I know down in Florida, at the time that I was dealing with it, I was dealing with Florida Medicaid pretty often, and so that was something that I had to really like turn to when I was with this. I'm thinking of one particular company, and so I remember that. But then I also remember like one of the biggest pressures that we were placed on is you have to meet a specific billable hour requirement. And at that company, I believe I had to meet at least 30 billable hours per week. But the difference was I had no virtual. I had to do everything in person. I had to drive locations. I had to
Oh, wow.
basically stretch myself to the point where like I took almost 2 weeks off of work during my first year, and I wanted to call out the day after I came back
Oh,
because
no.
that's how burnt out I was. But I also didn't know how to say no, and I also didn't know how to recognize that I was truly struggling. And the fact that you recognize that as a BCBA candidate is so important, And I hope that you take a lesson like that and really apply that as a BCBA because the thing is, this field is exhausting mentally, physically,
Yeah,
emotionally. There's so
absolutely.
much that's involved. Don't promise something that you cannot do, because of the fact that if you are overwhelming yourself, you're not going to be the candidate, the BCBA candidate that we want you to be. But then we also find that you might end up thinking about leaving because you're so burnt out. So I really appreciate you saying that because there's so much
Thank
that
you.
we're, yeah, there's so much that we as BCBAs really like struggle with when it comes to boundaries, work-life balance, taking yourself out of the BCBA candidate, BCBA like persona, when you take yourself away from that and you recognize yourself as an individual first, that's where I honestly feel like you get the most success, is recognizing who you are outside of who your job.
Yeah, I mean, it took a lot because I was really also like ashamed. Like, I felt like I can do so much better. But then I realized, okay, I'm really, really struggling right now with just a lot of different things. And so it took so much for me to get the guts to say, hey, can we have a quick meeting and so I can sit down and talk? And it obviously went over amazing. And I've had so much support and help. So it made me feel better when I could, kind of assert myself that way and explain, how I was feeling, what I was dealing with. And at the end of the day, saying I need to take a step back from things because I want to focus on prioritizing my kids and being the best person that I can be for them because that's like the number one part of my job. And so just having that heavy focus and like telling them, it's just like saying I need to do this so that I can be a better RBT and then applying that to like when I am a BCBA and like you were saying like not knowing how to advocate, advocating for yourself is so important in this field. And it's nice when you do get that positive feedback and support because you're like, okay, they understand, they don't want you to burn out either. And so I commend you for getting through all of that as well because 20 kids, that's a lot, but
It is.
it definitely, I'm sure, made you stronger as a BCBA.
It made me stronger, but it also made me realize that I needed to have very hard boundaries on my life too. Like now I feel like I'm in a good place because I don't have, I don't even think I have half of that now. But also too, like I do carry a lot of responsibilities within the role that I'm currently in. But at the same time, I'm also recognizing, okay, I have to take breaks at certain points. I have to, you know, look at my schedule and realize, okay, I am feeling overwhelmed. Maybe I can handle taking a 15, 20 minute, hour long break even, you know, because right now I need to have that because when I'm showing up, I want to be the best version of myself. And if I'm not putting myself in that position of, you know, taking care of myself, taking care of the things that I love outside of being a BCBA, because remember, identity first, you know, you're a human first and a practitioner second. But when you take the time to really love yourself and to do the things that you enjoy outside of the field, I think it's really just it goes to show it just really like helps you build your resiliency and then make you come back to the job and realize, okay, you know, this is actually kind of cool. I really like it here, you know.
And I think it's really important that people realize it's okay to be a human and have those human feelings and emotions, and to understand like no one's perfect, no one is a robot, you know, like we are all just humans and we want to do the best we can, but we also need to understand sometimes that means maybe taking a mental health day or taking a step back because it makes you stronger as a practitioner. So I think it's really important that it's not a bad thing to admit those things. I think it makes you stronger, that you're not going to burn yourself out for the any type of job.
I think so too. I absolutely think so too. And I think it takes us as leaders, us as BCBAs, BCABAs, you know, whoever, to really like model that behavior too. You know, not just like, oh, I'm gonna model how to, you know, ask questions about a client that, you know, you recently did an assessment on, but modeling advocacy, modeling, you know, what your needs are. You know, if I have a technician, for instance, I think about this a lot. I've had technicians who are driving over an hour just to see a kid for 2, 3 hours. That leads to burnout. And it's like, dude, no, like we're not doing that. Like we're gonna prioritize. It might take a second. I promise you, I am working tooth and nail to make sure that this doesn't happen. But that being said, you know, I am in your corner and I am fighting for you because I don't want to see you leave. I don't want to see you burn out because of something we could have prevented, you know. And that's something that I just think is so important to for the BCBAs that are listening to this. I think it's so important to not only like do this in your daily life, but to model it for the people that you are currently supervising, you know. So looking back on when you first started, what do you wish you had known about accruing hours and even aside from that, just about the experience as a whole?
I think figuring out the best method of keeping track of hours is really, really big. And remembering to plug it all in. I know from talking to other student analysts that the tracking of the hours can be really tedious, especially, you know, the format that you want to use. So that was a big one for me was, you know, what is the best method for me that also when my BCBAs look, it makes sense to them as well. So I think, you know, and I luckily my one BCBA had a template for me and I kind of customized it and made it my own to kind of help figure it out. But you know, I had to make it because of how my brain works into different columns. So I have like my direct session, then I have my supervising column, and then I have everything else. And I think the hardest part for me was remembering all the different like unrestricted hours, so like material prep, listening to the podcast, like all these other little things, and like who assigned it, how many hours it took, because sometimes I'm really bad at the start and end time for hours, and so then I have to like go back and stress about like, okay, I started at this time, I ended at this time, and then like calculating everything, so it can be a whole thing in itself, just the tracking of the hours and making sure, because then you have to make sure that you have a percent for unrestricted, a percent for, restricted by the end of each month, with the verification forms, and then, uploading all of that. So there's so many like moving pieces that go into it. So I think definitely keeping track of the hours and figuring out the best method to use that works for you. Because I know it's different for everyone.
Absolutely. I know some of the students that I've personally supervised have had like their own tracker. I know I've customized a tracker for some of the students that I've supervised, but then I also know that there's other websites that you can actually track your hours with as well, and that works for them. It still makes sense to me, but it also really makes sense for them too. And so that's one of those things that I look at and I'm like, okay, what is the best way that I can support them with this particular model, or this particular way of tracking hours? And I think the other thing too, at least I'm not sure about you, but sometimes just getting it tracked in there on a timely basis can be a lot too. I definitely feel for a lot of the, actually, let me take that back. I feel for all of my BCBA candidates in that regard because, you're dealing with sessions so many hours a day, and then it's like, okay, now I have to go in and I have to add this. And it's like, trust me, I don't want to micromanage your trackers. I just want you to get this in there so that, and if there's any way I can support, I'm happy to, but just make sure you're getting it in there so that way I know what hours I can sign off on.
And then, luckily going back, you have rethinks. So you have like, oh, okay, these were my restricted hours. Like I was with this kid from, 5 to 7 or whatever, So luckily you always have that as a backup too. But definitely I got much better at with like unrestricted since I was a little bit more of like your free time. It's easy with restricted because your set hours. But like, with everything else, it's like I would write down like I started at 12:30 and then I finished at, 1:30 or something. So like making sure you have all those different things in. That definitely I got much better because at first I was not, and I'm like, oh no. And then I was like, darn it. And then I have to like go back and like figure it out. And yeah, so it's just like, oh man. But yeah, just that part, I'm getting so much better at it. It's not, the most stressful part of anything anymore. But at first, I was kind of stressed of how I wanted it to look and, how the best method for it for everyone.
Yeah, that's definitely feedback that I've gotten from some of my own candidates. They've mentioned, just kind of like the tracking of it can be really, really tough. And trust me, I'm right there. I know that that can be really hard. I think on that end, what I've tried to do is I've tried to like advise, hey, this can count towards unrestricted, or hey, make sure you count this as restricted. But then also to like even just having just something to sort of like, because we use a different data collection system. We actually use HIP, and HIP is pretty new. But one of the things to do is to look at your schedule and kind of see like, okay, this is when I've done this. And I also advise just looking at Google Calendar as well, because Google Calendar can definitely count, and help with that as well. So that's something that that's definitely a piece of advice that I would give as well. So, yeah. Kind of on that, how has listening to resources like Safe Space or other podcasts, or doing like other types of unrestricted work, contributed to your development as a future BCBA?
It's been really awesome. I love listening to podcasts. So it's been really cool to listen to Safe Space and, a few other podcasts where I get different insight into the world through different eyes. Like they live in different parts of the country and they have, different levels of experience. So it's been really cool to kind of get a glimpse into everyone's life and how it's similar, but also very different, and like kind of like jotting down some examples and ideas. And I've been really enjoying Safe Space because it's been really cool to hear from so many different people and, how they do so many different things. Like they are a BCBA, but they also do speech therapy, or they do this and they do that. So it's really cool to kind of see like everything that you can do, but it's also like, wow, that seems like a lot sometimes. So, understanding and like learning through the podcast, and then, when your BCBs give you different articles to read, it's really cool to see like in a more scientific research approach to things. So a little bit more formal than kind of informal podcast. So it's been really awesome to kind of get all these different things and like hands-on working as well. So it's like different ways of learning that have really kind of helped me grow as a, practitioner and, something that I'll take into the field once I become a BCB in the future. All the different methods that can be used and all the different levels.
I love that. I love that so much, and I appreciate hearing that too, because, again, it just kind of goes, it kind of goes to show like there's so much out there, and it's really just so great to be able to kind of see what all is out there and how you can grow into a BCBA too.
Yeah, and
So.
I think like right now it's perfect because it's definitely growing and becoming more popular and more people are understanding what ABA is. Because, listening to other people talk, they're like, we're still a pretty like new field. How much it's grown over even like the last 5 years, it's been really cool to see all the new studies coming out and talking to people about their experiences. So, I love learning that way and getting experiences through that.
That's really just so cool. I love that so much. All right. Well, I'm gonna go ahead and drop our second code word. Our second code word is experience. That word is experience. It is spelled experience. All right. So just to kind of wrap up, so what advice would you give to someone just starting their journey and feeling unsure how to approach just how to approach school, collecting hours, all the things.
I would first just say, let's take a deep breath together. It takes a village. I talk a lot with the other student analysts. So we always kind of piggyback off of each other and, like they'll text or call me like, hey, I need help with something, or like, how did you do this? Or do you know? So making sure you build relationships with everybody, I think is really important. I would just say like, take one thing at a time, prioritize your time. You definitely need time management to do it all. Like if you're working full time, especially, you need to prioritize your work and then figure out when you're going to do school. And I always make a list of like my to-do. So that's how I always do it. I to-do with due dates. When is schoolwork done? And how can I do it and maximize that kind of free time during my day? I don't have a whole lot of free time, but the free time I do have, I'm always like, okay, I'm going to do a chunk of this and a chunk of that. When I get home, I'm going to do that. So time management, building relationships, sitting down, collaborating with other, student analysts that you work with, joining study groups. I've seen like a lot of those that have been really helpful. So there's so many different kind of outlooks that you can go to, but those are like my top ones for sure. There's so many more, but time management is a huge one.
Oh, absolutely. I think all of those are huge, and I love the time management point because that's definitely something that a lot of struggle with. So
Oh yeah. And as a BCBA, you definitely need time management to make sure you get everything done.
couldn't agree more. Could not agree more. What are you looking forward to as you continue in your coursework and field work?
I think I'm really looking forward to challenging myself with more like expanding my mind in this field because I know so much, but I know that there's still so much I need to learn. And I'm a very, humble person. So I'm like, I know I don't know everything. I know a lot and I'm really good at what I do, but there's so much more I can be doing. So I think with, the classes, as they keep getting more challenging and there's more work and like things to do, I'm excited to really like challenge myself to think outside the box and make myself uncomfortable and doing things that I didn't think I could do before. So not staying in my little safe bubble, but really challenging myself and, I say making myself uncomfortable because I get very comfortable like in my little box. I don't like to be seen. I just like to do my thing. But I want to definitely branch out and be a better person and a better worker and, do so much because I want to do so much in this field, and then I don't know where the future will take me, but I want to make sure that I get everything that I need to just make the lives of kids better. That's what my goal was to just help kids, and so I want to be that person.
Love it. I love it so much. And that should be the end goal. You know, being a BCBA is a nice goal to have, but the end goal when you're in this field is to change the lives for the clients that we work with for the better.
Yes, absolutely.
That's what it's about, right?
Yeah.
And finally, if you could describe your fieldwork experience so far in one word, what would it be and why?
I think challenge in a positive way. It's making me do a lot more than I've usually done. So challenging myself, putting myself into BCBA shoes, making me think outside the box. So it's been a challenge, especially with time management, and doing taking on more active roles. And I think that that's a really good thing. You know, I want to be challenged and take on more, but also knowing where that boundary is, where it's too much. So I think that that is kind of where I think the word challenge in a good way.
I love it. I love it. Abby, thank you so much for spending the last about hour with me talking to me a little bit about your experience.
Thank
Super,
you.
super excited for this episode to officially publish. And where can people find you or contact you?
Well, I'm on Instagram. I'm not entirely active, but I'm there. So if they want to follow me, they can. Can I say my handle?
Absolutely, go for it.
It's beatnik soul underscore 26.
Love it. I love it.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm mostly there. So
Very cool. Very cool. Well, thank you again, Abby, for joining the podcast tonight. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. I've been your host, Michelle Zeman. Thank you for tuning in, and I will see you on the next one. Bye.
bye.